Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As this year comes to an end, we thought we'd put together some of our very favorite segments from the past year. It was our first year for the 21st. Let's take a listen to one now. The U.S. is in the middle of a teacher shortage crisis, and it's about to get worse. That's according to a new report out from the Learning Policy Institute, which says that a big part of the problem is that about 8% of the teacher workforce is lost every year. That translates to hundreds of thousands of teachers leaving the classroom, the majority of them before retirement age. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from one Illinois teacher who's in that boat. But we also wanted to find out, what does this mean for Illinois schools and its students? This is, of course, against the backdrop of big news this week regarding two public school systems and teacher contracts. This week, the Champaign Federation of Teachers voted to ratify a proposed contract agreement, meaning a potential strike for Unit 4 has been averted. That's not the case in Chicago. Yesterday, the Chicago Teachers Union set a strike date of October 11th. The union vice president tells news organizations they're taking this stand because of the current contract status. They've been working without one for more than a year, and because of pay cuts and cuts to school staffing and services. The problems of attracting and retaining teachers is something we're going to be talking about today on the program. As always, you're welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. We've got a conversation going on our Facebook page. We're joined now by Professor Dean Cantu. He's on the line from our partner station, WCBU, where he teaches at Bradley University in Peoria. He's a department chair and a professor of teacher education. Professor Cantu, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you for having me.
We're in studio with me here in Urbana is Megan Kessler. She's a former public school teacher in several schools throughout central Illinois, and she's now a graduate student in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Illinois. Megan, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Professor Cantu, let me start with you and talk about this new report, because it states we're in the middle of a teacher shortage of, we're looking at maybe 64,000 teachers nationwide, the shortfall. How do you think we got here?
Well, this report actually identified four factors that have led to the current situation in which we have a shortage of 64,000 teachers this year, which is only projected to grow by 2018 to around 112,000. And one of the reasons you've already mentioned is the fact that we have such a high teacher attrition rate, 8% per year, which translates into nearly a quarter of a million positions that have to be filled as a result of this. And one of the this report drills down a little bit deeper, and what they find is that two thirds of those who are leaving are pre-retirement attrition numbers, and so that means these are folks that are not leaving because of retirement, but for other reasons, and these positions have to be filled, and as a result, we have a great need. For teachers, that is even more complicated by the fact that we have fewer individuals going into teacher preparation programs. That's another reason that they cite, is that we've seen over the course of the past few years a decline of about 35% individuals going into teacher education or teacher preparation across the nation, and it really all stems back to the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009.
So retention, recruitment, I want to focus on the retention issue for just a moment before we get to how Illinois is doing compared to the rest of the country, because as you mentioned, we're looking at an estimated 8% of teachers leaving the classroom each year for one reason or another, but actually a lot of them say it's because they're frustrated with some aspect of their jobs. And one of our producers spoke with a former Chicago public school teacher from Lane Tech High School. His name is Chris Marzek. He taught math for 6 years and he quit his teaching position earlier this year. He's now working for an insurance company, and I want to play what he said about his experience as a teacher.
I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I think the big thing working with the kids obviously is one of the most more enjoyable things. Leaving was kind of a tough decision, but with regards to the direction that CPS was headed in and just education as a whole, it was kind of one of those decisions I think I had to make. It just seems like with regards to the budget issues and school funding, that it's just going to continue regardless of what public school system you're in this state. I had an inclusion math class with 35 students in it, and you know, that's something that becomes extremely challenging and not really tolerable. And I know many teachers, at least at the particular school they had, I think the minimum number of students they had in a class was 31 or 32, which becomes challenging at any level. and it seems like the numbers continue to go up every year.
That's Chris Marzek, a former Lane Tech High School in Chicago math teacher. Megan, I want to ask you, Megan Kessler, who's in studio with us, you taught in a couple school districts. You now have stayed in the teaching field. You are a graduate student at the University of Illinois. I know, what did you hear from your colleagues who left for teaching for other careers? How common is that? What we just heard from Chris.
I mean, I think the Learning Policy Institute report is definitely representing sort of the experiences of teachers on the ground, so to speak. I know I can speak mostly to my own experience having left the classroom. I would attribute it mostly to a lack of professional growth opportunities or professional development opportunities. If you're not interested in moving into administration, there can be a bit of a ceiling for teachers who would like to pursue leadership opportunities and to continue to grow as professionals.
Professor Cantu, what can you tell us about the report and to Megan's point about professional growth and opportunities for teachers to have those kind of training opportunities? Was that something that was also mentioned?
It was. In fact, one of the ways that the report recommended approaching or addressing the teacher shortage is to look at, and particularly for new teachers, look at that induction period for new teachers and provide what is needed, such as mentorship and coaching and common planning periods and opportunities to collaborate with other colleagues. What they found is those school districts that provided that kind of comprehensive network of teacher support, particularly during this induction period, were twice as likely to have lower attrition numbers than those other districts that did not provide for that professional development or that PD, particularly during that induction period.
How is Illinois doing compared to the rest of the country, Professor Cantu? We talked about a 64,000 person shortage across the country. What are we looking like in Illinois?
Well, earlier this year, there was actually a report that was issued by the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools, and that's one of the questions that was asked of superintendents is have you experienced a shortage, and if so, in what areas? And what they found in that report is that broadly speaking, 60% of the school districts across the state indicated that they had difficulty staffing certain positions, and these positions, what this report revealed is these go beyond what we typically call high demand areas, such as special education, bilingual education, ESL, English as a second language. These were areas that areas such as elementary education and some of our secondary education in, certainly in math and science, but also even in, physical education, social science. And that was sort of elucidating that this went beyond what we traditionally find as high demand or shortage areas into a lot of the other licensure areas across the state.
We're going to be speaking with a superintendent from a rural school district, by the way, who's going to be joining us later on in the program about the challenges he's faced recruiting teachers to his district in Southern Illinois. Just a note to our audience. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. I know a lot of teachers are working right now, but we'd love to hear from people about what the challenges are. We'd love to hear from parents as well. You can tweet to 21st Show. You can post on our Facebook page. We got a Facebook comment from Charlene, who teaches at University High School in Urbana, and she says, "What strikes me as the biggest threat to recruitment and retention of high-quality teachers are all the policies that decrease teacher autonomy in the classroom. Top-down curricula, driven mostly by standardized testing, simply sucks all the joy out of a profession, which, in my experience, is one of the most creative and satisfying careers out there. It doesn't cost any money at all to fix this problem, but does require a lot of folks in power, from school principals to state and federal lawmakers, to place more trust in the expertise of the teachers they hire." Professor Cantu, do you feel like there's a problem with the lack of trust of teachers who work in the public school system, to Charlene's comment?
Well, that was one of the questions the Learning Policy Institute posed to those teachers who leave the field. And that area that you're talking about actually ranked number 3 in terms of the reasons that were articulated for leaving the teaching profession: dissatisfied with school assessment, accountability policies. And actually that was followed by the number 4 reason was dissatisfied with administration. So that, again, is one of the areas that is being cited by teachers as a reason for them to leave the profession. profession prior to retirement age. And it's also one of those areas they also asked what would bring what they call leavers back and re-entrants, as they're called. About one in three teachers will actually come back in and re-enter the workforce. And that is one of the areas, as well as something that was addressed earlier, and that is, guarantee of retirement benefits and salary, as well as a smaller student-teacher ratio within
the classroom.
So
those are the top two of that.
Right. Those are among the top reasons.
Megan, I wanted to ask you about that, about the bureaucracy, about this standardized tests. And you do hear this from teachers a lot. I wonder what your opinion is on that.
I taught social studies during my 6 years in the classroom, so I wasn't as subjected to quite as much of that top-down accountability as some of my peers, especially those teaching in math and more heavily tested subjects. But I do think, in Illinois especially, we've come through a real strong cycle of lots of different reform measures. They come out really frequently, and the expectations on teachers are to implement these rather quickly with a little bit of less training or support than I think a lot of teachers would like. And I think that's where those frustrations over a lack of autonomy or agency in your practice comes from, feeling, that you're held accountable or you're being assessed as a teacher or evaluated as a teacher on a lot of these new reform measures without quite as much support or training as you'd like to have. And it really does change the nature of your job. It changes the nature of the work that you do with your students when you're being asked to implement new types of reforms in your classroom.
Megan, what led you to leave the classroom and decide to not leave permanently, but take a break and further your education?
Yeah.
So, but still stay in the field.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of a hybrid in this situation. I left the K-12 classroom after feeling like I had hit that ceiling that I had mentioned earlier, that I was really interested in furthering leadership opportunities for myself. I was interested in teacher education. I was interested in trying to develop myself further as a professional in the education field. But I wasn't interested in becoming a principal. I wasn't interested in becoming a superintendent. Those are very different jobs.
And would you say you were frustrated with with your day-to-day job on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's always rose-colored looking back.
Right.
But I do, there are lots of frustrations when you feel like you don't have quite as much agency, and the lack of agency and the lack of leadership opportunities certainly are related kinds of frustrations.
And what led you to now? And so what's your goal now?
Yeah. So now I have, the real fortunate opportunity of working with pre-service teachers here at the U of I through my PhD graduate assistantship. So I'm teaching methods courses of social studies, future social studies teachers.
So you're teaching people who are undergraduate students who are studying to become teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
And what do you tell them?
Yeah, so it's a real kind of goal of mine for my student teachers to enter the field with real clear eyes about the state of policy in Illinois, especially social studies teachers. These pre-service social studies teachers, as we call them, have a real eye or ear for policy issues and political things. So it's important to me that they understand the challenges that teachers are facing in Illinois in our public school districts, but still enter the classroom with a real passion for improving the public school system.
Professor Cantu, do you think that, to Megan's point, is there a sufficient enough expectation setting of students and undergraduate students who are studying to become teachers? Do you think in Illinois we're doing a good job of making clear what the job of a teacher entails, particularly in a public school system?
That is one of the areas that was addressed in the report as well, and that is preparation of pre-service teachers. And what they found is that those pre-service teachers, those teacher candidates who are in program, teacher education programs, that are in a comprehensive preparation program, one in which, for example, that they're out there in the classroom, the P-12 classroom early, for example, in their freshman year, that they're out there for a number of different field experiences in diverse settings, where there's a breadth and depth of preparation, both in terms of pedagogy, as well as in content areas where their student teaching experience is at least a semester or longer. Those individuals that went through those types of comprehensive programs are 2 to 3 times more likely to stay in the profession, not leave the profession, than others who went through sort of what might be called an alternative or a fast track program. So that's exactly right. helping those individuals so that they have that kind of comprehensive preparation, so they know exactly what to expect in the classroom, so that they've been given ample opportunity to be out there during their college experience, is exactly what is needed to address the high teacher attrition rate that we're experiencing.
Professor Cantu, do you think there's enough time, a student teaching classroom, is there enough time with that with undergraduate students, with, as you said, with pre-service teachers?
Well, there is if you go beyond just the student teaching experience, and that's sort of an old school model would be if you just waited until a teacher candidate senior year and their first time in the classroom would perhaps be student teaching. But our model here at Bradley and other institutions across the state gets the students, the teacher candidates out there early in field experiences, again, oftentimes their freshman year, and it's not a one-time only experience. For example, here we literally have five different field experiences leading up to student teaching, so that they're out there six or seven semesters out of the 8th semester program.
Wow, that's great. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. This is an encore edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. Stay tuned to hear more of this encore edition of the show. Coming up, we'll have more stories and news from across Illinois. We're talking about the teacher shortage crisis that's being faced in this country and what that means for Illinois schools. We've been speaking with Dean Cantu. He's a professor of teacher education at Bradley University. He's there at our partner station, WCBU. Megan Klessman is in studio with me here in Champaign at WILL. She's a former public school teacher and a graduate student right now in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Illinois. You're welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455. We've got some tweets to 21st Show, 21st Show I'm going to get to in a minute as well. And I want to bring one more person into this conversation. Chuck Blyer is a superintendent of the Pope County School District 1 in downstate Illinois. Superintendent Blyer, welcome back to the 21st. Thank you for taking time to be with us today, especially in the middle of a school day.
Well, thank you, Nyla.
Last time we spoke with you, Superintendent Blyer, was back in June. You were telling us about the impact the state budget impasse had on your school district. It's a rural school district that depends on the state for about 60% of your annual budget. And I wanted to bring you back today to talk about another set of challenges that you face, and that's what we've been talking about, which is recruitment and retention of teachers. What makes it hard for you to get good teachers into schools in your district?
First, I'd like to concur with Megan and Dean. They were spot on their analysis of what's going on in Illinois with teachers. As far as able to recruit teachers to my district or any rural district, you're usually looking for people that are, of course, living in your area. That's the best way that we can retain a teacher. That means that sometimes we don't have the necessary people in our area because we're rural, and then that means people are going to drive in. So with the drive-in of maybe 40, 50 miles a day, that means that person is going to come and work for me as long as it takes for them to get a job closer to home.
Yeah, that's tough, right?
That's how it works, yes.
As we're talking about this, our callers are welcome to join our conversation. It's 1-800-222-9455. Again, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Carrie in Decatur. Hi, Carrie. You're a former teacher.
Yes, I am. I taught high school English for 20 years.
And what do you think would help attract more young people into teaching, into keeping them into the field?
I think if they felt safe and secure in their workplaces. I believe that a lot of them are ignored by older staff, or worse, they're bullied off the jobs by older staff because they get dumped on with the bad students in the school, the difficult to educate students. And the extracurricular activities, the committee assignments, and so on and so forth, we burn them out oftentimes in the first 25% burnout in the first 5 years, and then people leave the profession. Those that stay sometimes dig in their roots. They become more expensive. A lot of those are the best teachers, but some of those are the worst teachers, who set up a cushy situation, and anybody who wants to expose them better watch out.
Mm, okay. Well, thanks for I appreciate that comment, Carrie. Professor Cantu, I wonder if you could speak to Carrie's comments about teacher burnout, and particularly in the first year. I know we touched on this briefly in the first part of our conversation. What does your research show on that front?
Right. Well, again, that first year is a critical period of time. One of the things that that the study shed light on is the fact that without that kind of support system or support network, the percentage of teachers who leave, the attrition rate for that first year ranges from 18 to 41%. And in there are things that can be done, obviously, on a part of a school district to try to lower that attrition rate. And some of those are having that sort of support network, looking at some of the ways in which they can provide that kind of coaching to first year teachers, for example, you know, having an induction program in place, that mentorship. Creating a collaborative environment so that that some of the teachers, the veteran teachers, can serve at, truly as mentors and coaches and provide the support that the first year teacher needs. With that kind of a network, the school districts can address the attrition rate and be sort of at the lower end of that as opposed to in that upper 40% mark.
Superintendent Blyer, how do you handle creating a supportive network for teachers within your district?
That's a good question because over the last 3 years, I've hired six new teachers right out of college. I personally make it an objective of my job to go to those teachers and talk to them personally and ask them how they're doing and how I can help them with their position. And then I enable the principals to also provide that support. Most of the young a lot of younger people, at least when I came into profession a long time ago, was here you go, now have fun. But now what we try to do is bring that person along as a faculty member and engage them in their daily work day. And then as the year goes along, keep assessing and bringing them along, make them feel a part of the infrastructure of the staff. And if you don't, I've seen this go bad for teachers because that, like Professor Cantu said, they'll just leave because they'll consider it, I didn't take the right profession, and they'll just end immediately. So the youth need guidance, and I try to provide it.
I understand, by the way, when we're talking about the shortage and we're looking at applicants, at one point you used to have up to 50 applicants for teacher openings. Nowadays, you have as few as 5 people applying for an open position. I know there's a school in your area in Southern Illinois that couldn't find a math and science teacher at all. How did they end up handling that?
Right. They have actually brought back a retired teacher to come in for like once a week or twice a week to make sure the curriculum keeps flowing, and then they sub that job out the rest of the week to a sub who just makes sure that things are turned in. Also, they'll use online curriculum and math like the Khan Academy. And most curriculum today is built with an online component, so there'll be a lot of basically kind of coaching subs versus hiring a teacher. And it's not that they don't want to hire a teacher. They're desperate to hire a teacher, but they can't find one. But one thing that is different about Illinois is that we have very difficult time recruiting teachers out of the state because of teacher prep programs in Illinois and reciprocal programs throughout the country. Illinois is very difficult to get a license in. So once you get all you're perfectly capable of teaching Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, Indiana, which I border.
Right. I was saying, you're so close to that, right? Because you're so close to Missouri, Indiana, and Kentucky. That's a potential pool for you, but you're not able to because of licensing requirements. Is that what you're saying? It's not, you're not really easily able to recruit?
Absolutely. It's not only that, but once let's say we bring a teacher across the border, then they have 1 year to get their credentials and their licensure up to speed, and that's more money and then more time after work, and it's just not conducive towards a recruiting environment. And the sad part is that we in Illinois pay pretty well, but when you balance out, you're young and you're driving a lot and you've got the pressure going back to school, and it's a factor that inhibits our ability to recruit.
That's Superintendent Chuck Blyer. He's with School District Number 1 in Pope County. We're talking about teacher shortages, the teacher shortage crisis. We're talking about recruitment, retention throughout Illinois. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to a caller in Chicago. Hi, Chris. You're with the organization Chicago Parent Congress. What's that, and what's your comment?
Yes, hi. The Chicago Parent Congress, thanks for having giving me a second, by the way, but we are a group of parents who started to come together a few months ago just because we felt like a lot of these conversations around education don't include the voices of parents. We think that right now in Chicago, the big conversation around teaching is the strike. And as I listened to the program this morning, we've got a lot of problems that we need to fix, and none of them include the four issues that our teachers are getting ready to walk out on our kids because of. And, you know, the issue of wages, steps and lanes, pension pickup, and health care. We're not striking, no matter what we hear the union talk about in the press, we're not striking about mentoring. We're not striking about coaching. We're not striking about creating the kind of environment that's going to mean success for teachers and for students. We're striking over those four issues. And so the Parent Congress is very much against this strike, not because we think everything is perfect, but we don't think that the issues that are causing teachers to walk out on our students are very legitimate. As we just heard on your program, we pay really well in this state, and in Chicago, we make more money than, you know, only the wealthiest districts in the state pay more than our district.
Thanks for your comment, Chris. That's Chris in Chicago. And again, he's referring to the decision yesterday, the news yesterday from the Chicago Teachers Union to authorize a strike for October 11th in Chicago in that public school system. Professor Cantu, you know, as we're hearing all of these conversations about, you know, pay, it's interesting that did pay come up in the survey in terms of salary? Did teachers talk about that in terms of whether or not that was something that caused them to leave teaching?
Some of them listed that on the reasons why they left. However, what's interesting is if you look at the reasons, what would bring back those who have left the profession and potentially be re-entrants, the increase in salary was the third most common response. Actually, 67% of those who responded said an increase of salary would be one of those variables that would have to be in place in order to come back. And actually, ahead of that was the ability to maintain their teaching retirement benefits. That was number two at 68%.
Okay.
So those are issues that are variables that individuals look at when they're considering whether or not to come back into the profession. And one in three do make that decision to come back in. And that's a pipeline that is much needed to address the teacher shortage issues that we're facing.
I appreciate this conversation. We've got a couple minutes left to wrap up. And as we do that, I really want to think about talking about solutions. And I wonder, for Superintendent Blyer, if I can ask you about what would be, if you could give me the top three most helpful things that would help you recruit and retain teachers in Illinois, what would those be?
Wow, top three. Okay, number one.
You can give me more than three if you need to. That's okay.
Well, no, I won't do that. Relax the licensure requirements. It's too tight. The one thing that also hasn't been really talked about is the teacher program itself. There are so many requirements that are placed upon college students to get through the teaching program that I didn't have to go through when I went through it. That really takes a lot of money and time and more coursework and testing. They test them to death. And a lot of the youth today are like, why do I want to go through that and make $35,000? So that's just the ability to get the kid through college. And, of course, college is extremely expensive, as we know. So something along those lines, if college would reduce its costs, which they're not going to do, if they would relax the requirements to get the student out of the TAP or teacher education program, which I doubt they're going to do that, but I think the governor and the assembly could relax the licensure and allow for people to become more mobile.
Thanks for that. Professor Cantu, I wanted to ask you, we asked our followers on Twitter about what could be done to attract teachers to Illinois schools. We got a tweet from Jenny who says, creating fair requirements for people who want to change careers and become teachers, that's something that should be done. Do you think that that's a difficult situation right now if someone wants to change and change fields and become a teacher? Is that a tough thing?
Actually, what we're starting to experience an increased number of individuals who are what we call post-baccalaureate degree licensure students who are interested in changing careers, who already have a baccalaureate degree. And Bradley, as well as other institutions in the state, have programs in place, post-baccalaureate licensure programs in place to create avenues for these individuals to come in and over a certain period of time be able to complete all of the requirements relative to the Illinois Administrative Code or the rules for their respective licensure area. So those are available. And we're starting to see an increase in the number of individuals who are making that very decision, coming back and trying to meet the requirements for a teaching license.
Megan, what do you think? What would you like to see? What's the number one thing you think needs to happen to help recruit and retain teachers, particularly as we're thinking about Illinois?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky question. I agree with Professor Contoon saying that these post-baccalaureate programs are wide open and really strong. For anyone interested in gaining licensure, I would especially encourage that track rather than some of these fast-track programs. I think they're a little less well-prepared, and those field experiences that we talked about might be a little bit diminished in some of those fast-track programs. But I think overall, I think Illinois suffers from an issue of a lack of equity funding of our public schools. I think that's probably why these rural districts are experiencing such pull from their staffs, is that they're not able to offer some competitive offers to teachers who are looking for positions. And just overall more support, as Professor Contu mentioned, those first 3 years or so are so crucial, and providing support from the state for mentoring and induction programs so that teachers who are entering for the first time aren't feeling so lost.
Let's end our conversation with a caller, Fred in Leland. Welcome to the 21st. You've got about 30 seconds. What comment did you want to make, Fred?
Oh, hello. Thank you. I don't know. It just seems simple to me. I mean, I'm just a regular guy, but it's just support. Support for the teachers, you know, support and pay for one thing. They're really low paid. Support from the parents, support from the school itself.
Teachers are
just not respected enough. They're not given... Kids are sent to school, and they're not sent there for the parent, for the teacher to raise the kid. They're sent there to be taught, to be educated, and the parents need to help with that. They need to tell them to respect what the teacher's trying to tell them. You know, right or wrong, the teacher's in charge, and they've got to direct them, and they kind of got to go with that.
Thanks for that, Fred. I appreciate your comment. That's Fred in Leland. I want to thank Professor Dean Cantu joining us from our partner station WCBU at Bradley University, Megan Kessler on studio with me here in Champaign at the University of Illinois, and of course Superintendent Chuck Blyer joining us from Pope County where he is superintendent. Thanks to everyone who called and tweeted and posted as well. Thanks for being with me. Stay tuned to this encore edition of the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is a special rebroadcast of a previous episode. This is The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo.
Oh, he's so cute.
So adorable.
Oh, can we keep him? Can we please? Oh, just when you thought Sir Galahad couldn't get any cuter, he got cuter. So, so much cuter.
Hey, you gotta try a hickory nut. It's gorgeous. Who is that?
Squeaks, this is Sir Galahad. Sir Galahad, this is Squeaks.
Nice to meet you.
The pleasure is all mine. What do you say you let me out from this cage? So
that's the opening of the first episode of Nature Cat from season one. It's a PBS Kids series that launched in 2015. They just announced yesterday a deal for the second and third season. Nature Cat is consistently ranked among the top five PBS kids shows nationally, reaching 34 million TV viewers since their debut. The co-creators of Nature Cat, Dave and Adam Rudman, are brothers who are natives of Highland Park in the northern Chicago suburbs, and they join us now from there via phone to talk about what inspired them to create the series and what they've got planned for the upcoming series. Adam, David, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having
us. Hello.
David, can we? Yeah, David, can we start with you? I understand part of the inspiration for the show is creating a. It's a show about a cat who explores the outdoors, even though he's an inside cat. You thought that was a problem for kids who don't go outside as much as maybe you guys did when you guys were kids. How does the show aim to get children interested in going outside?
Well, when we were growing up, you know, we spent almost every day outside playing just in our backyards and running around the neighborhood. And we sort of had that house that all the neighborhood kids would come to and hang out. And we were noticing with our own kids, we both have four kids, that they weren't going outside as much as we were when we were kids. And we thought maybe we could create a show or something that would inspire kids to want to get out and explore just their own backyards. So that's kind of where Nature Cat came from. Was we just want to inspire kids to go and, you know, sort of play the show outside. Yeah, that's kind of how it all began. And the idea of a cat being kind of the lead character was sort of just a funny idea because cats, you know, are kind of ill-equipped to be outside in nature. So we thought if we make Nature Cat this sort of this explorer, he wants to kind of be like an Errol Flynn type explorer. But when he gets outside, he's always crashing into trees and falling down hills. And, you know, it's a good opportunity for lots of comedy.
Now, Adam, are you guys, it sounds like you guys are dog people than cats, if you think, because I was thinking, why not a dog? But,
I think we are a little more dog people, but we have Hal, yeah. Nature Cat's pal, and we get all of our dog humor and all of our dog love out with Hal.
And I guess there's a little bit of irony here in the fact that you're trying to get kids watching a TV show to go outside. But I guess, Adam, is the idea, well, this is what they're going to be doing anyway, watching television. So at least hopefully we'll get them to maybe think, oh, I'll go outside after.
That's exactly it. I mean, we have to go where the eyeballs are and what kids are doing now. So we figured this is where we're at. But if we can inspire them after watching the show to get outside, then it's a win. It's a win-win for us and for the show. And it also, you know, kids today, we're also inspired by book of Richard Louv, who wrote Last Child in the Woods. And, you know, he coined a phrase, nature deficit disorder, where, you know, a lot of kids say are just growing up not connected to nature. So that's our goal, is kids watching the show. And we have these play the show moments where kids, and we see that it's actually, you know, it's working through Twitter and social media, that kids are watching our show and seeing things that our characters are doing. And then they're going outside to, you know, build a butterfly garden or try to look for squirrel prints on the ground or stuff like that.
And so do you have kids and parents tweeting at you the adventures their kids are having outside then, it sounds like? That
yeah,
were inspired
yeah, we
by
do.
Watching the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We're getting pictures and we're getting stories from parents who, you know, who are saying their kids are playing in the mud and they're very happy that they're doing that. They're inspired by Nature Cat. And it's been amazing just the amount of tweets we're getting and emails and letters from parents and kids who are fans of the show and thanking us for it. So it's been real positive.
David, I know you pitched this series to PBS back in 2009 and you with hand-drawn sketches you made. And I wonder, what are the steps you take from going from an initial idea to the show to a full-blown cartoon series? What's that process like?
It was originally just kind of a big idea of which we talked about, which is just this cat who wants to be an explorer. So we kind of had a nice, just the concept was really strong and funny. And then we pitched it to PBS and they really liked that idea. And we developed it with them over the next few years. And that was just a lot of going back and forth with PBS. We'd come up with ideas and send it to them and they'd give feedback. And we'd add characters and, you know, some characters worked, some didn't work during the development process. And eventually we got to the point where we made a pilot. So we made one episode and then we tested that
with kids, and we learned a lot from the testing. We learned, you know, that we needed another character, we needed another female character, we needed to make sure that we portrayed, you know, like iPhones and technology as a good thing, because I think in our pilot we kind of didn't have it as a good thing, but we kind of made it something that, you know, you can use your phones for exploring too. So we added a character that this character Daisy that was sort of her thing. And then after the pilot, we revamped the show a bit, and then we got picked up for, you know, 40 half-hour episodes. So it was about a 5-year process, I think, of just lots of developing.
And Adam, when you guys are doing, when it's a cartoon, how does it work in terms of creating a cartoon in this day and age? Do you guys, is this something that you all sketch out? Is this something that, I know originally there were hand-drawn, I imagine, how much work do you all do by hand or computer individually and then have animators? What is that, how does that process work these days? And you guys do this, I know you have a studio on the second floor. I know your television production studio was actually in Highland Park.
For this, I mean, for the actual designs, David did all the original designs for the characters, and then what we do for this is we'll write a script, and then the scripts will go up to our animation partner in Canada, Nine Story Animation, and they'll, you know, do storyboards to the script or an animatic, which is kind of like moving storyboards, you know, very rough. And then we'll, you know, go through the storyboards, we'll make comments, and then it goes to the next pass, which is a first pass at the animation. And then there's a lot of back and forth to get it right. But
how long does it take? How long does each episode take then? How long is that process?
Well, it's a year from script to screen. So, it takes 1 year to do one episode.
Wow.
The whole process.
Okay, so you're working on multiple episodes at once then, obviously.
Oh, the whole schedule is going. Yeah. So there's a bunch of episodes going at different phases of production at one time.
And you guys have
the voice records.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to ask if that was my next question. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that the voice records happen between the finished script and the storyboards. So we usually do the voice records with our talent and then line it up almost like, almost like a radio play of it's all the lines laid out from the episode and lined up, and then we send that to our animation partner in Canada, and then they do the storyboards based on the voice records.
Oh, interesting. And you guys, David, how did you all, it was interesting when we've been playing episodes of Nature Cat in the office for the past couple of days, and someone said, hey, I recognize that voice. And I said, yeah, do you watch SNL? So how did you get all of the different Saturday Night Live talent involved in voicing this? Was this before they were on SNL, the couple characters you have?
No, it was after they were on. But I had worked on SNL on another thing, and I met Bobby Moynihan, and we just sort of got, you know, sort of hit it off, and then when we were coming up with who to voice these characters for Nature Cat, Bobby just sort of popped into my head. It's like, Bobby would be so great for this character, Hal. And then we asked Bobby if he wanted to do it, and he said yes, he'd do it. And then we started thinking, well, maybe some of the other SNL guys would be interested in getting on this also. So we just, you know, asked them. We asked Taryn and Kate McKinnon and Keenan, and they all wanted to do it. So that's kind of how it happened.
And do they end up doing some improv on the scripts that you write? Do you give them a little bit of leeway, or are they?
Yeah, a lot of improv and a lot of leeway. You know, they'll do the lines as is, like once or twice, and then we'll say, "All right, have fun," and, you know, make it a lot funnier, and they'll just go off and. The improvs are hilarious, and, you know, a lot of their improvs make it into the scripts and into the show.
Adam and David, I wanted to ask you guys about your background, because David, you were a Muppet performer for more than 25 years. You played Scooter and Janice on Sesame Street. You played Baby Bear in Cookie Monster. And I've seen in the past interviews where you said what it's like to interact with kids when you are doing Cookie Monster, how you're standing right there doing Cookie Monster's voice, but the kids probably don't even notice you're there because they're so captivated by the actual Cookie Monster puppet. And I wonder how much you tried to kind of get that magic of kids being so in love with and with these characters, how you guys put that into creating the characters on Nature and Cat?
You know, I think all of, well, Adam wrote for Sesame Street for a long time also. And I think, you know, those characters are, well, they're amazing characters and they're so well-rounded. You know, they're not one-dimensional characters. And I think that we wanted to really show our characters with lots of, you know, range. And I think that's kind of what we wanted to, you know, for what we learned from, you know, Sesame and Muppets is just to kind of, you know,
daring characters and that they have faults and they have things they're scared of and, you know, and kids can relate to them. And they also see how much, you know, these characters, they love each other and they'll do anything for each other and they're good friends. And so we just want to capture all that in these characters. And then adding, you know, we're inspired by Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny.
Right, because that's your background, right, Adam? Because you also wrote for Tom and Jerry.
The Tom and Jerry,
and Scooby-Doo, as well as, it's sort of like, but it's such an interesting, your background, because it's not just Tom and Jerry and Scooby-Doo, but it's also like Sid the Science Kid and Sesame Street. So I feel like those are kind of opposite spectrums. You think both of those end up in Nature Cat? All of the kind of that wide range?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's everything that we really love too. I mean, you know, growing up, I mean, we, you know, Bugs Bunny, Tom and Jerry, Woody Woodpecker. I mean, you know, we love those, you know, those shows and the comedy and the physical comedy. And we wanted to get that in Nature Cat as well. And then like David was saying, these characters that, you know, they're so endearing and so well-rounded, you know, we kind of threw it all into the show and it didn't happen over time. They had to evolve and the characters have changed a lot since the first script we wrote. They feel like they're getting stronger and stronger, and the cast brings so much to it as well. So it's just a good mix of everything that we like to do.
So you guys are now licensed to outlets in Canada and Sweden and Ireland, lots of other countries, the Middle East and Israel. How do you think about the international audience as you guys are now developing seasons 2 and 3? Is that something you think about when you're writing?
Go ahead. I think we just think about the audience as a whole, you know, in terms of just, you know, this age group and families. And because this is a problem that's, you know, happening all over the world. I mean, we see research from, you know, in England and different countries where it's the same problem that, you know, the kids are not, you know, growing up with a connection to nature. So, but, you know, the problem's there and we're just go about business as, you know, this is one big, you know, group of kids we're trying to reach worldwide.
One last quick question for you guys. We've got less than a minute left, but just wonder what adventures is Nature Cat, what in the team, what are we going to look forward to for the next upcoming season?
Well, we are going to be doing 2-hour-long movies, which are going to be fun. One is going to be a holiday special. And one is going to sort of be inspired by Goonies, I guess, in a way.
By Goonies. Oh, great. Okay.
So those will be fun. And then
a lot
more
adventure.
Okay.
Some of the secondary characters have sort of, you know, stepped up and they've really come alive. So we're going to do more with this character Ronald, who played by Kenan Thompson, so he's going to be more a part of the show too.
All right, we'll look out for more of Ronald in upcoming episodes of Nature Cat. I want to thank David and Adam Rudman, two brothers who are co-creators, producers, and directors of Nature Cat, which you can find on PBS. Guys, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. You can always find past shows by going to www.21stshow.org. You can also find us on NPR, One, iTunes, and Android. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.